third and four for the Eagles here. Murphy and shotgun. Here's the snap. He rolls left. He throws.
WZBC Sports.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another WZBC Sports podcast. This podcast is Season 3, Episode 5, and it is going to be the best time of the year podcast because we got a little bit of everything going on. Today I'm joined by Matt Marasco, and we're going to be talking about all three major sports that are still going on at Boston College right now. We have some football, some hockey, and some basketball to get through. So I think we'll start off talking about a little football, Matt, and kind of
talk about
there was so much promise early on. This team kind of fell off the wagon later in the year. I believe three straight losses.
Yeah, you believe correct.
It kind of put us in an interesting spot coming up to the bowl game. So I don't know if you want to talk about them for a little bit here.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, after an absolute roller coaster of a season with some incredible highs and some incredible lows, we're right back to where we were last year after a substantially less eventful season last year, finishing the regular season at 7-5 once again. We've done that a lot lately. I think the last three or four years at least. I think the last 4 years now, because this is Coach Adazio's fifth season, we finished at 7-5. But yeah, you know, it was definitely a roundabout way to get here. So we started out 3-0, and then what looked like a season really just altering loss to an 0-3 Purdue team. Turns out they're the best 0-3 team in the country.
Yep, as I predicted.
As Jack predicted. Shout out to Jack for that.
Thank you.
And then, you know, we rebounded again and we built ourselves back up to now we're 7-3 after four straight wins. We get College game day here. We think we're going to beat Clemson. And then Anthony Brown gets hurt. And then we proceed to lose the next three games. And, you know, by the end, it feels like the sky is falling. There's talk about, you know, Coach Adazio's future here at Boston College. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But it was definitely, you know, lots of highs and lows from losing to an 0-3 team and feeling, you know, starting the year with a lot of high hopes. We were thinking, you know, potentially 10-2 absolute best, you know, maybe 9-3 at the very least, 8-4. Anything less than 8-4, I think Jack would agree, would have been a disappointment.
Yeah, no, I agree. And when you look back at the season, I think this season should have finished. I mean, Boston College could have very reasonably finished the season 10-2. Right, you lose to Clemson when your starting quarterback gets injured on the opening drive of the game. What can you do, right? It's an elite team. Your starting quarterback's out. Your hands are tied. That loss, you can understand. The Purdue loss, we got outplayed in every asset of the game. We had no right to even be on the same field as Purdue that game. They deserve that win. You can't really look that one over. Then you look at the loss at NC State where
you should win that football
game. The offense was nowhere in the first half. They came alive in the second half. And then the controversial fumble with 3 minutes left on inside NC State's 10-yard line, which would have given us the lead. So a very controversial ending there, but a game that we should have won if we played up to our potential for all four quarters. And then, of course, this Florida State game just 2 weeks ago, which was probably one of the harder games I've had to watch.
That was painful.
It was a horrible game to watch. It was a game where BC dominated the game, but just couldn't finish, right? There was, you know, BC would move the ball well, then turnover. They'd miss the field goal. Or, you know, the defense played great. The defense played well. It held Florida State down. And just the offense couldn't get it going. We'd move the ball a little bit, but we couldn't score points. You know, we have a lead late, and we just can't seem to build on it. And Florida State's offense, who had done pretty much nothing all night long.
No, they were bad.
DeAndre Francois throws like an 80-yard bomb with under a minute left to give them the lead by 1 point, at which they would go on to win. As we were unable to run the two-minute drill on offense, which doesn't happen often.
No.
Not really a quick-moving team. So that's a game that we could have won. I think the NC State game is a game we should have won. The Florida State game is a game we should have won. And then this recent loss to Syracuse, where, yes, Syracuse did sort of... I mean, Syracuse dominated us 42-21. But they beat us bad. I think Matt agrees with this. We both talked about this a little bit ago. We both think Syracuse is a bit of a fraud at 20. We think they're a team that can be beat. Notre Dame showed it when they blew them out on national TV. You know, I think it was just a lousy showing from this Boston College team. They didn't play up to their potential, and they could have done better. So, yeah.
They just play badly.
I agree with you. Look, the hype at the beginning of the season was there for a reason. You know, this team was ranked for, I believe, 4 weeks of the season, which, you know, the first time they had been ranked in years. You're ranked for multiple weeks. You get College Game Day here. You know, there is reason to believe the hype. BC showed it at times. At times, they also showed that they weren't really ready to take that next step and to be one of the better teams in the ACC, you know. We're still kind of in that middle ground range. We're still like an average team year in and year out. But yeah, I think the predictions earlier in the year could have very well come true. And at the end of the day, like you said, you know, another 7-5 season does kind of feel disappointing when you look at how this team is built.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we had years past where we would jump up and down for 7-5. You know, the first 7-5 year under Coach Addazio, you know, you consider it a success. But again, like we said, you know, all the highs and lows, it was just an incredible football season, really. That being said, you know, there were some great individual performers on this team despite the 7-5 record. We have, going to the Senior Bowl, which is a national showcase for seniors, we have Will Harris, Tommy Sweeney, Chris Lindstrom, and Zach Allen. And then we have more than several first team All-ACC performers. Chris Lindstrom again, A.J. Dillon, Hamp Cheevers, and Tommy Sweeney were all ACC. Second team all ACC. Zach Allen, which I think is the biggest snub ever.
Huge snub.
He should have been first team.
He'll be a first round pick.
He should have been first team all ACC. And same thing with Mike Walker. I dare somebody to find me a better return man than Mike Walker. Not just in the ACC, but in the country. He was second team. Third team, Aaron Monteiro, Connor Strachan, Will Harris, Ray Smith, and Wyatt Ray were all third team. Honorable mentions, John Baker and Ben Petrula. So we had a lot of very good players. Yeah. That's basically what we're looking at there. So that leads me to this question for you, Jack. Do you think that we've seen kind of the high watermark under Coach Addazio? Is 7-5 our ceiling? Because let's face it, this was the most talented team, the best team that he's had in his tenure at Boston College. And it's looking like it's going to be the most talented team for the foreseeable future. As we know, the four-star recruit linebacker has since decommitted from Boston College. So, you know, do you think, have we seen the ceiling? Is this the best team we're going to get? And is the best team we're going to get going to be a 7-5 team under Coach Addazio?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a good point. I don't think so. I think he's capable of leading this team to more. I think this question kind of builds off the, you know, what do you think the future is for Addazio? Do you think he should come back? Or have we seen, you know, is this his ceiling? He can't get us past this hurdle. I think Addazio will be back next year, because I know there's been speculation on that. People have been calling for his job to, you know, people have been saying he should get fired following the 3 straight losses to end the season. Look, I think there are a couple of things this year that kind of went wrong, and there's definitely been some interesting moments. I mean, we talk about last week in the last game of the season, Addazio burned, who was it, David Bailey's redshirt.
Yeah,
so just a questionable there. In the Florida State game, I believe it was, there was a questionable timeout call.
We called.
If you want to talk about that real quick.
Yeah, we called timeout, not to interrupt you. We called timeout to then try to draw them offsides and punt. We took the penalty, tried to draw them offsides, and then just punted. You could have just done that without calling a timeout. You could have just tried to draw them offsides with your offense and then punted the ball. It would have been the same result, and we sure could have used that timeout later in the game.
Yeah, so there are definitely some interesting moments in terms of Addazio, but I think when you look at it, I think this team is very talented. You have a couple unfortunate things. You look at the fact that A.J. Dillon's been hurt since week 4. And I agree that it's been poorly managed. Like, I don't think we should have seen as much of A.J. Dillon down the latter half of the season as we should have, because we know, everyone knows that he is not playing at 100%. He's playing nowhere near 100%. That being said, I think the big thing about Steve Addazio, which is why he will make this team better, and why he should keep coaching and stay here, is the fact that year in and year out, he gets one of the lowest recruiting classes in terms of the ACC. So he's able to find guys who are like diamonds in the rough, right? That 4-star recruit who just backed out would have been the first that he's gotten in I don't know how long he's been here, 6 years maybe?
Five or six years.
That would have been his first 4-star recruit. The bottom line is, if you're a high-star recruit in college football, you probably don't want to go to Boston College. And if you are a 4-star recruit and you commit to Boston College, they take your 4-star away. Most likely, just because it's not a big football school, we're not really known for college football, we're not a powerhouse. If you're a high recruit and you can go play for a team that has a chance to win a national championship, you're most likely going to do that. So I think what Addazio is able to do with taking guys like Tommy Sweeney and turning them into, you know, first team all ACC players who are going to be playing in the NFL. You know, you look every year, he produces guys from that defense that go the GoPro. I mean, we've seen he produces an incredible defense pretty much year in and year out. You have Hamp Cheevers, who's leading the, I believe he's leading the NCAA in interceptions, or he's right up near the top.
I gotcha.
I think he has 7 or 8 now on the season. You know, another guy who I think was a 3-star recruit coming out of high school. So I think what Adazio is able to do with what he gets is very impressive, and the way that he's able to find these guys and the way that he recruits guys who he can turn into, you know, very talented, you know, all-stars in the ACC is, there's something to be said there, and I think he will be able to break this hurdle, this 7-5 hurdle. You know, granted, it might be tough. We're losing a lot of guys this year. We're losing a lot of that offensive line. We're losing some key starters on defense. But, I mean, it will be interesting next year because you're going to have the main players on offense back. You're going to have Anthony Brown. You're going to have A.J. Dillon. And you also have this other great quarterback prospect coming in. So if they want to switch it up there. So I think the fact that you have the offense coming back, which has been such a high-powered offense, right? This year was, I think we averaged, early in the year I know it was 38 points. I think we slowed down a little bit. But it was still one of the more high-powered offenses we've seen at Boston College in recent years. So if you have the key pieces coming back, you know, you lose Jeff Smith, so that's one wide receiver. But, you know, you still have Kobe White. You still have all the tight ends. Boston College always has like 12 tight ends.
Except for Tommy Sweeney.
Yeah, you lose Tommy Sweeney, but we've seen a different tight ends step up and make plays throughout the year. Sweeney will hurt, but there's plenty of other tight ends who are ready and who have gotten game experience and who should be able to carry that position just fine. So I think you take that and you take the fact that we've seen what Adazio is able to do with defenses and take guys who aren't standouts, who aren't highly recruited players, and turn them into great defensive players. I think that will put Boston College in position for success next year. I really do, and I think he will be able to do better than the 7-5 model of consistency. You know, that being said, I think you gotta get to the point where you start to have a bit of a tighter leash on him. You know, if it keeps happening year in and year out, then you start to question it and think about maybe moving on. But I think given some of the circumstances of this year, so like the injuries to Dillon, you know, some of the unfortunate losses, like the NC State game, which, yes, Boston College didn't play great, but at the end of the day, that was a horrible call by the refs right before that fumble happened. The player was down by forward progress. So a couple of unfortunate plays that kind of cost us the season, the Florida State Hail Mary. You know, just we're one or two plays away from being, you know, a 9-3 team. And so I don't think that should really necessarily, we should blame this all on Adazio. I think he's capable. I think he put the team in a pretty good position to be better than 7-5 this year. So yeah, I know I talked for a lot there. I jumped all around. But Matt, I don't know if you want to kind of talk about that, because I don't know if you necessarily agree with what I just said and talk about Adazio's future and if this team can eclipse the 7-5 mark with him at the helm.
So a couple different things. One, Hamp Cheevers is tied for first in the NCAA in interceptions with 7. Coach Adazio has been coaching here since 2013 was his first season. So 2013, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 6 seasons with Boston College. 5 of those 6 have ended in a 7-5 record. For anyone that knows me, I usually have an opinion and I stick to it. I don't change my mind easily and I don't usually waffle on stuff, especially regarding sports. That being said, I am very torn right now about Coach Adazio. Part of me is sick and tired of 7-5. We're the definition of average. We're like the Rams under Jeff Fisher. Be done with it. Cut your losses. I don't think this team will be as good next year simply because this is a run-first team. And, you know, this is a run-first team and you're losing your entire offensive line. And, you know, A.J. Dillon's an incredibly talented back. Is he as good without, you know, the most experienced offensive line in the nation? No running back is. You know what I mean? So that's going to be tough to rebound. But at the same time, like Jack said, you take away – so that part of me says, yeah, you know, good riddance, let's move on, cut our losses and go. The other part of me says, well, wait a minute now, you know, take away any team's best offensive player and they're going to struggle, you know? Take away Trevor Lawrence from Clemson, and they're going to struggle. You saw they almost lost to Syracuse, who we still both think is a fraud. Take away Tua from Alabama. Well, I'm not going to use Alabama because they have another great quarterback. That's a bad example. But take away Kyler Murray from Oklahoma, right? They're not going to be in contention for the college football playoff. They're going to be 7-5. Mm-hmm. So you look at that, and you say, yeah, you know, there have been some very tough breaks for Boston College this season. But then you look at the decision making again, and I'm just going back and forth. I'm just, you know, just saying things as they pop into my head. You know, burning the red shirt. If you're gonna burn that red shirt, burn it in the Florida State game. Burn it in the Clemson game. Burn it in those two games where you could really use another back, fresh legs in the backfield in these close, very contested games where, you know, you either A, in this Clemson game where you just need anything on offense, any help you can possibly get, or B, in the Florida State game where you saw Dylan getting tired, he's limping noticeably on the sidelines, and you're in position to win this game. You have this game in grasp. You need a first down. You know, use a fresh running back if you're going to burn his red shirt. Don't wait till the last game of the season.
In a blowout.
Now, granted, it wasn't a blowout at the time. We were up at the time when this happened. And that decision makes me wonder a little bit, you know, how badly did Coach Addazio want to win this game? And did he think that he was coaching for his job in that Syracuse game, that he's willing to pull out all the stops? I guess we won't know that. But, yeah, so looking at the record since Coach Addazio has been at Boston College, we finished 2013 7-6, tied third in the Atlantic. We lost the Independence Bowl. 2014, 7-6, 4-4 in conference, fourth in the Atlantic. We lost the Pinstripe Bowl. 2015, this was a little bit of an aberration, 3-9, 0-8 in conference, seventh in the Atlantic. We get back on track kinda in 2016. We go 7-6 again, 2-6 in conference, tied sixth in the Atlantic. We win the Quicken Loans Bowl. That is the only bowl win in the Addazio era. 2017, 7-6, 4-4 in conference play, tied third in the Atlantic, lose the Pinstripe Bowl. This year, 7-5, 4-4, fourth in the Atlantic. So look, we finished 7-6 a lot.
We do.
We've won one bowl game. We've appeared in four. Look, it's tough to argue with winning records. And part of it, too, is you have to look at the program that we've built here. You know, nobody's getting arrested. You know, kids aren't getting kicked out of school. Kids aren't getting kicked off the team. And there is definitely something to be said for that. That being said, you wonder how long you deal with 7-5, 7-5, 7-6. I don't know. Only time will tell. I agree. I think that I think he'll be back next season.
For sure, in my opinion.
Yeah, Zach says for sure. It'll be interesting to see. A lot of the more casual football fans are excited. They're saying, oh, we have Dylan and our quarterback back. You know, our whole offense is back. And that's kind of the buzz around campus is that it's, you know, we're going to continue to move forward. I think that this team is going to take a step back next year without, you know, you lose what Coach Addazio has described as, quote, the nervous system of his defense and Will Harris, two of the best edge rushing tandem in the country, or second best edge rushing tandem in the country behind Clemson, in my opinion, and Zach Allen and Wyatt Ray. It'll be interesting to see what happens moving forward. I think that offensive line is going to be a huge loss. But then again, we do have guys that have been in the program and are ready to step into those roles. So we'll see. Again, I think he will be back, and I'm not sure if I'm happy or upset about it. I'm pretty torn.
You're torn is what it sounds like. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of question marks going forward into next season. I think next season will be a big year for him.
Yeah, that's a great point.
I think that could definitely be the make or break year. But yeah, like you said, the 7-6 records keep popping up. You know, a loss in a bowl game this year, we would be 7-6 again, and we would be, what is that, 1-4 in bowls under the Addazio era. So it wouldn't be great. Speaking of bowl games, it'll be interesting to see what Boston College gets. That news should be coming out. I believe it comes out after all the conference championships, which are this weekend.
Yes.
So we should know where Boston College is heading, you know, within a week here, in the upcoming days. There's a lot of speculation earlier in the season that Boston College might be going to either, I think it was the Hyundai Sun Bowl out in El Paso, Texas. There's the Music City Bowl down in Nashville. Those are two big bowl games for ACC schools. However, with the three straight losses, it definitely hurt our chances, as you have a 9-3 Syracuse and an 8-4 NC State team that will most definitely get picked ahead of us for, you know, the best bowl games for ACC teams. It's looking like, you know, in terms of options, I know the Military Bowl is always there for ACC teams. You know, the Pinstripe Bowl, again, is probably something where you might peg us, but because we were there last year, I would doubt BC goes back. But we'll see. You know, could end up in the Quicken Loans Bowl again, but I doubt that. There's a lot of 7-5 ACC teams, and they'll probably give it to some of the, you know, like a Georgia Tech or something.
Yeah,
Duke.
A 7-5 on the bad side.
Yeah, on
the
bad
ACC.
Side of the ACC, not the Coastal. So we'll see. Definitely tune in. You know, keep checking out Twitter. I'm sure we'll be talking about it. We'll tweet about it. There'll be another football podcast once all this comes out. So definitely keep an ear out for that. And with that, I think we've we've touched on most of football. I don't know if you have anything else you want to add, Matt.
You covered everything there.
So now we'll go on, since it is the best time of the year and we've got all three major sports going on. We'll talk about some men's hockey, which has been a very interesting topic. And, you know, Matt and I, we've talked about this a lot on our AM show and even on, you know, Sports Saturday once. We talked about how we thought, you know, this team came off really slow start.
Against really good teams.
Right. Good teams. They started off 0-5, which was, you know, the worst start for BC in, like, years. Like, since World War II era, we're talking.
Yeah, since before Coach York played here.
Yeah, just a ridiculous long time. And we both talked about how we thought this team would turn it around. How they had the talent, they had the potential, they had everything they needed to turn it around. And then we saw it for a little bit against, like, you know, the BC in conference. All of a sudden starts to win. They beat Merrimack. They beat Vermont. They beat New Hampshire. They go on a little bit of a win streak.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you know, we go away over Thanksgiving break and they lose to Bentley, which is, for those that don't know college hockey, that's the team. They're in a weak conference. You know, their wins are against teams like Holy Cross, Sacred Heart, not very strong hockey programs. And they've played a couple of teams in Hockey East. They lost to, I believe, UMass Lowell, and they lost to, I think it was New Hampshire. So, you know, when they come into our conference, they normally lose. They normally get beat pretty good. And then they come in, they play us in Conti Forum on our home ice, and they beat us. They won 4-2 in a game that they were up 4-0 going into the third period. So, again, that just kind of makes us scratch our head. We don't really know what to think of this men's hockey team. There's so much talent, and we talk about this a lot. There's incredible talent on this roster. You know, top to bottom, you have a goalie who's a third-round pick. You have Wallstrom, who's playing on your second line, who was the number 11 overall pick in the draft last year. You have, you know, your top line is all three future NHL players. Husko was, I think, a fourth rounder last year. Cotton was a sixth rounder, and Mattia, I'm not sure. You know, in defense, I think like half of our defense has been drafted, if not four out of the six guys, more than half, you know, are future NHL players. So there's so much talent on this team, and it just really makes you scratch your head to see that this team can't figure it out. You know, right now they're sitting at 3-6-1. Not a great record. They are 3-1-1 in conference.
Which is important. You know, conference record is important.
It is very important considering how talented this conference is. But, you know, when you look at it, if, you know, 3-6-1, if they don't start winning non-conference games, which has been an issue for this team, but if you don't start winning non-conference games, you're probably not going to get an at-large bid into the NCAA tournament. I mean, if they win the majority of their games in conference, you're looking at big wins over, like, a Providence, UMass Lowell, UMass Amherst. Some of these schools.
That other school on ComEv.
Yeah, BU. That would definitely help.
We weren't supposed to say BU. Yeah. They're just the other school.
They don't even deserve to be named.
No.
Those wins would help, but again, the inability to win out of conference definitely hurts them. I mean, look, 3-6-1 as an overall record is ugly, plain and simple.
Yeah, it's not good.
You know, when you look at the teams at the end of the year that are going into the NCAA tournament, they're not. They might have 13 losses at most. You know, 10 losses. So BC's all, you know, you're almost already there. You got to be careful. You're really playing with fire with such a slow start. And if you want to make the NCAA tournament, it looks like their best bet would probably be to win Hockey East right now.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And talking about out-of-conference play, this stat is mind-boggling. It makes zero sense. Boston College is 0-18-4 in its last 22 non-conference games, and that includes the Beanpot. And so that's a 2.5-year span, because Boston College is playing about 10 non-conference, 9 or 10 non-conference games a year. In their last 22, they have not won a game, which I don't even know what to say about that.
Yeah, it's not good.
It just doesn't make any sense.
Nope. Yeah.
You know, this is a team that's a national powerhouse. It's supposed to be a powerhouse. We've won 5 championships since 2000.
Yeah, we won 3 in 5 years. No, I agree, and you really do scratch your head, because it's not like this team has been bad. This team last year, we didn't win a single non-conference game, yet we won Hockey East, which is arguably the best. No, I'm not even going to say arguably. It is the best hockey conference in college hockey. So, yeah, it's just a bizarre kind of fluke. You wonder if it's a mental thing. We do schedule tough. There's no two ways about it. We are looking at good teams. You know, we're going on the road to play top 10 teams. We're having top 5 teams come here to Conti Forum.
Right.
And I don't think, you know, I'll speak for myself and I'll let Jack answer this too, but I think he agrees with me. We're not looking at this team, you know, like the 10 or the 2008, 10 or 12 team, you know, these national championship caliber teams. I don't think this team is a national championship caliber team. That being said, I do think they are an NCAA caliber team, a tournament caliber team. Potentially, you know, I don't know if they call it the Elite Eight in hockey, but, you know, a Final Eight caliber team, maybe.
Well, I mean, if you're an NCAA tournament team, you're a top 16 team in the country.
Yeah, which and I think they are. They should be. They have the talent to be.
Exactly. That's the bottom line. They have the talent to be. The 0-22 and the 0-18-4 in their last 22 non-conference games just really doesn't make any sense. I don't know if it's meant to. You don't know what it is because it's not like those games are all on the road, right? You know, half of those games or more are being played at Conti Forum.
Yeah.
So the inability, you know, at home ice too, to win games.
Students gonna show up.
That is a good point. You know, we haven't seen crazy student sections apart from the games against that other team.
That other team up Comm Ave.
Which, speaking of which, that's a huge series this weekend.
Yeah.
It is the battle for Commonwealth Ave this weekend. Both teams are struggling right now. Both teams could use a spark. Both teams could use a sweep to really get going. You know, a sweep over BU could be what this team needs to get going. I know I said it again. Matt gave me a look. But this team needs a jump. They need something, right?
Yeah.
Because it just seems like they're losing to teams that they shouldn't be losing to, like a Bentley, and they lost to Merrimack earlier in the year, which is not a historically good program, which isn't going to be that good of a team this year. They'll be in the bottom half of Hockey East. You know, and then when you play the good teams, they're not really showing up. So it kind of seems like it's just, I don't know if it's like a mentality, an effort thing, but, you know, a jump start, get a little confidence going would be huge because this conference has top teams in the nation, right? I don't know if you're aware of this. This kind of shocked me. I just read this. UMass Amherst is the number three team in the nation.
Yeah, I did not know that. If you told me that we had a team that was top three, I would have told you probably Providence first or BU.
Providence was five in the nation. I think they've slowed down a little bit. I think they've dropped a decent amount. But yeah, UMass Amherst is number three in the nation. That's a tough test. Providence still ranked, still very good. Northeastern still ranked, still very good, even though they lost that top line from last year.
That was a ridiculous.
So we will have plenty of chances to turn this around and to prove ourselves as being one of the 16 best teams in college hockey. But something's got to change. It's just kind of from top to bottom. I think if I had to say one thing, I think you just need more production throughout the lineup. Right now, when you look at this team, the top line is really doing all the scoring for Boston College.
Yeah.
You have Julius Mattia, David Cotton, and Logan Husko. They lead the team in points. I think Cotton has 14. Husko, I think, has 9, and Mattia has 7 or something like that. Mm-hmm. So that line is just producing goals night in and night out.
It's arguably the best line in the country.
I agree. It is the best line in the country, but it's, you know, the rest of the team isn't really doing much behind them. You know, it would be great to see some of the other lines get going. It'd be great to see Wahlstrom get going. It'd be great to see, you know, McPhee get going. So tons of talented guys.
Fitzgerald.
I don't think he has a goal yet. Michael Kim on the points. So it'd be great to see the whole team kind of get going, seeing more offense coming from throughout the lineup. And also, I think it'd be great to see Joe Wall post a couple of shutouts this weekend just to get some confidence back because he was in net in that Bentley game. Again, inconsistency has kind of been something we've talked about with him. Just, you know, just consistent, like, you know, two goals a night, which is a lot to ask for, if we're being honest here. But just a more consistent output rather than the occasional, like, 5 or 4 goals. You know, if we could just a steady, you know, steady netminder, steady goaltender presence.
exactly. And you made a great point about, you know, this weekend being the battle for Comm Ave. There is no better way to jumpstart a season than a big win against a rival. You look at rivalry games, especially in college sports, and you look at, you know, whoever wins that game or wins that series, usually they traject upward. And if you lose that, then a lot of times you'll see teams tank, and one loss because it's a loss in a rivalry game turns into 2 to 3 losses. And the next thing you know, the season's halfway over and you're pretty much done for. This is a huge, huge, huge series. You need to take at least one, if not both of these games. You saw Wall last year at home, just, you know, like we've been saying, inconsistent. And we've talked about this before on our AM show. You know, he gives up, what was it, 7 goals?
I think it was, 6 or 7.
Six or seven. And then turns around the next night, up Comm Ave at Aganis, and posts a shutout, sit on his head. So, again, I think that if you're going to look for a spark, and this team does need a spark, both these teams need a spark right now, I think this is the time to do it. This is, you know, rivalry games. Again, I cannot harp on this enough. They are either springboards or diving boards, right? You can either spring up or you're diving down after these games. And there's really no two ways about it. That's just the nature of rivalry games. They really, you know, one team goes up, one team goes down from here. So we'll see what happens. Hopefully the students show up. The first game, puck's probably going to drop in about, what, 50 about, minutes?
Yeah.
I 45 think, minutes from now up
think,
at Aganis.
I think puck drop is 7:30 tonight at BU.
So.
And then 7, yeah. again, both teams need the spark. What, like you said, a great way to get going. You're playing your rival and a team you hate, a game you're going to get up for. You know Conti Forum is going to be packed, right?
Absolutely.
It's
absolutely
pretty much the one game of the year where everyone's showing up and going. Could be a great chance to kind of jumpstart this team, get them going, get them rolling before Christmas break. Because, again, over break, they go and play Notre Dame, who's an incredible team in South Bend. So another big test there. So, yeah, I think that will wrap up hockey.
Yeah, absolutely.
Touch on them a lot. Now we can talk about basketball.
Yeah.
Third and final present of this holiday season podcast. Hey, that was good.
That was great. That was awesome. So I have here in my notes, in all caps, I can't figure this team out.
Yes.
And I can't figure this team out. So that's all I have to say about basketball. No, I'm just kidding. So everybody go back and listen to our basketball preview preseason podcast. Jack and I, along with fellow WZBC sports personality Ben Neuwirth, all gave our predictions. Ben said 21-9. Jack, I don't remember what you said, and I said like 16-14 or 15-15.
I think I was like 19 and what would that be, 11?
Something like that.
Yeah.
19, 11, something like that. So if you listen to that podcast, which I recommend you do, it's a great, great show.
Definitely listen to it.
Definitely listen to it. We kept saying how deep this team is going to be. Well, we're not that deep. You know, you hate to say it, but it's true. We're not that deep. Winston Tabbs, definite bright spot. Well, you know, let's talk about, before we start talking about players, let's just talk about how the season has gone. You know, you look at the first three games and I'm just going to be honest, they weren't pretty.
No.
They were bad.
Not good. You know, kind of just playing to the level of your opponent, I think would be the best way of putting
it. Yeah, absolutely.
You're losing to Milwaukee at half, you come back and rally in the second half to win the game. You beat St. Francis Brooklyn by 5 points in a game you're favored by 22. You lose to IUPUI in a game where they're tallest player is
6'7".
Yeah,
and that's not that tall.
You know, we have what, two or three guys, you know, who are taller than that.
No, more than that.
And we lose the battle on the glass, right?
Yeah.
So it's just then Boston College goes to this Fort Myers tip-off tournament, or
the first annual, yes, Fort Myers tip-off tournament.
The first annual, they play Wyoming, beat up on them, or 88-76 wins. And then they play Loyola Chicago.
And the Fighting Sister Jeans.
Yes, who was famous last year, Final Four team. And they beat them to win the tournament, 78-66, get a little mojo back.
Another 12-point win. 12 points might be our magic number here.
It might.
Oh, another one, three in a row.
Yeah, because then they go in, they beat Minnesota in the ACC Big Ten Challenge. Minnesota comes into Conti Forum.
That's a good win. That's your best win of the year.
That's a good win so far. You beat them 68-56. And then, was it just last night, they beat Sacred Heart, 81-73. So they, you know, after the first three games, I would say that the tournament looked like a turning point really for this team, whereas they were playing a more complete game, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Not playing as sloppily, not playing as close in games that we definitely should win, like, you know, like Wyoming, for example. And then it carried over into that Minnesota game, which kind of great defense. Minnesota was also pretty bad from the field, like they were just cold shooting.
They're not a good shooting team. We packed in a zone and they just couldn't shoot over the top of it.
Yep. Sacred Heart. And so this team's kind of got a little momentum. They're rolling. They're looking, you know, they have a little confidence right now going into their two biggest non-conference games of the season, I would say.
Yep.
You have a matchup with Providence this Tuesday, followed by a trip down to Texas A&M.
Yeah. So, yeah, just to talk about that again. You know, I said going into the season, I was looking at a team that I thought was going to be close to 500, and those first three games really made me feel very good about my prediction. I wasn't happy that I felt good about my prediction, but I did. You know, losing to IUPUI at home is quite frankly inexcusable. Yeah. If we found out the next morning that there were changes in the coaching area, I would not have been surprised nor upset. With that being said, they have turned it around, and credit Coach Christian. You know, anybody that's listened to me talk ever knows that I don't usually say that. He sent an absolute shockwave through the program. He benched a bunch of starters going into the Wyoming game, and the team has really responded since then. The question still, it's always going to come down to defense and hustle and rebounding. You know, this team can put the ball in the basket. There's no two ways about it. The question is, how efficiently can they put the ball in the basket, and how, you know, can they play defense other than Stephon Mitchell? Can we have guys that rebound and play defense consistently? So that being said, I think, yeah, it's time to – I can jump in a little bit to these individual players now. Winston Tabbs, freshman, underrated. He wasn't even a top 200 recruit coming in. Guard out of D.C. For anybody that's not a big college basketball person, you know, there's a lot of very good players that come out of D.C. area, Maryland area. And, you know, he kind of flew under the radar a little bit. ESPN beat writer says he's going to be good, and lo and behold, he has been very, very good, with the exception of the IUPUI game when, you know, I think it was almost like the whole game was like a heat check for him. He got blocked a lot. He was taking relatively ill-advised shots. Since then, he's been outstanding. He is averaging 14 points per game, just over 14 points per game, just over 2.5 assists per game. He is averaging 1.4 turnovers per game, so you'd like to see that number go down. But for a freshman coming in, I don't think we could have asked for anything more from Winston Tabbs, you know, close to 15 points per game. Kai Bowman, still, you know, he's just under 20 points per game, 2 turnovers to 3.6 assists. So again, you'd like to see the assist numbers go up and the turnovers go down. Under 50% from the floor, but it's 446 isn't terrible. You want to see, you know, 35% from three. You do want to see that go up. Same thing with Tabs, 33% from three. You want to see that go up as well. But again, you know, these two guards are incredibly talented. It's a good backcourt.
Kai Bowman, most dynamic guard in college basketball.
Jack just said that because he knows it's going to get me fired up. I disagree with that. Go listen to another podcast or any other time that I've ever talked about basketball and you'll see. How about the emergence of Nick Popovich, though?
Yeah, that's been interesting. And you talked about Winston Tabbs kind of getting a heat check in that IUPUI game.
As did
Pop. So Pop had a horrible game, IUPUI. I don't have his stats up, but it wasn't pretty.
It was
bad. He did not play well. He didn't really do anything well. And after that game, like you said, Coach Christian benched him for a couple of 2 games. He didn't start him. He sat him on the bench.
He didn't play against Wyoming.
Yeah. Just completely benched him against Wyoming. And then after that, he was coming off the bench, whereas he had been a starter. And since then, Pop has really just... You see, the effort has gone up through the roof. He looks more determined out there. He's playing with like a chip on his shoulder almost. And he has been very, very good. I was watching the Minnesota game on TV, so I could hear the announcers talk about it. They were saying how they interviewed him. And how he apologized to the team following that IUPUI game. He took the loss upon himself. He felt responsible for that. And he's used it to kind of like push himself forward. And I mean, it's really looked like a different person. Like, it's kind of like he flipped a switch. He has really looked great in the Minnesota game. I don't think he missed a shot. Granted, he's not taking long-range shots, right? He's just under the basket, but still.
Definitely in the second half. He had 18 in the second half and didn't miss a shot in the second half. I know that for sure.
So he's looking great. So that's a pleasant sight. And we kind of saw flashes of this at the end of last season. I remember in the ACC tournament, he looked really good.
Yeah.
He was playing the best basketball I'd seen him play.
Yeah.
So, you know, we saw flashes of it. And, you know, we're seeing it early in the year this year, which makes you think, you know, maybe he's turned a corner. Maybe this is what Pop is. He's this kind of player, which would be great for this team, you know, getting that kind of production out of the big man. So, yeah, and going along with that, I mean, we can talk about some of the other players. Jordan Chapman, good at basketball.
Yeah.
Great at shooting.
Jack's using my notes here. We have a little...
Matt has very descriptive notes on all of our players.
Yeah, Chapman, good at basketball, especially shooting. It's true. He's very efficient. I love Jordan Chapman.
He made a great layup in that Minnesota game. It was like a reversal. I didn't know he could do that. I didn't know he was that athletic under the hoop.
Yeah, no, he's sneaky athletic. Kind of like Jerome was last year. He is sneaky athletic. One thing that I will say, I just saw this stat actually as I'm looking at the internet. BC is shooting 29% from three.
Okay.
I would like to either see that percentage go up or the number of threes go down, because we do shoot a lot of threes.
It is true. You see a lot of guys who you don't think should be hucking up threes.
Yeah.
Putting threes up.
Yeah.
You know, I think Pop's attempted a couple this year. Steph shooting threes, not the prettiest sight.
Yeah.
I remember in the beginning of the year, who was it? Jarius Hamilton.
Hamilton.
He kept putting up threes. And I was like, you know, go at the hoop. You're 6'9".
Can hit your head on the rafters if you jump.
Exactly. You're built like a linebacker. Just attack the defender. So I would agree with that. I think there's a lot of three-point shots that shouldn't even be attempted.
Yeah.
You know, look to get the ball low. Or if you're going to be shooting a three, you know, have Chapman, Kai, or Winston.
Yeah.
Right? If it's not one of those three shooting, you know, it better be a wide open look.
Yeah.
Or towards the end of the shot clock. Or else there's really no reason to be taking that three. So I'd agree with you. I think that percentage will go up, I hope.
That's pretty low.
I mean, it's almost unsustainable.
Well, yeah, the problem is that you're looking at the guys that you want to be taking the threes. They're both shooting, you know, 35 and 33%. So right. that those numbers aren't great. You don't love those either. But yeah, that being said, hopefully that number goes up. You know, get better shots. You know, look inside out maybe. Pop's been on fire, so look for Pop to kick it back out. But speaking of, you mentioned Jarius Hamilton. And in my notes, I have yikes. Again, you know, I can't figure out this team, and I can't really figure out Jarius. He is supremely talented, and he will show flashes every game.
Just put you in awe.
Yeah, and you say, wow, you know, if he could do that all game, holy smokes. So he's a freshman. You got to give him time. There's no two ways about it. I'm still incredibly high on Hamilton. I think that he is going to be great, and I'm very excited to see what he does over the next 3 or 4 years here. He's going to be good. There's no two ways about it. It's just a matter of how long it takes him to get there. He does, like we said, he shows those flashes of athleticism. I love his motor. That's one thing that I was really interested in seeing when he got here. You know, is he going to be one of those four stars who's all about the hype and all he wants to do is score? No. He averages, you know, over 4 rebounds a game, 5 points, 4 boards. But the boards, you know, he's a hustler. He's very athletic. He gets his rebound, so you like to see that. And the offense will come. He plays good defense.
He does play good defense, which is nice to add to this team.
Stephon doesn't have to guard 5 guys every possession now. But, you know, you got to concern a little bit, right? Because this is a guy who's coming in who's, let's be honest, he's a 4-star recruit, supremely athletic. He's never really had any struggles on a basketball court before.
That's true.
He could just out-athleticize everybody because he was always the most athletic, most talented guy on the floor.
He was always the best guy on the floor, yeah.
And you have to wonder, you know, and you saw in the Minnesota game, his confidence was shot. He passed up a lot of open mid-range and three-point jump shots. Mm-hmm. And part of his game is, yes, he is that athletic, but he is also a shooter.
Right.
And, you know, he had these wide-open looks, and it got to the point where Minnesota wasn't really respecting him on defense, and he was passing up these shots, and he would hesitate. You could see him think about pulling the trigger on these shots and then decide to pass it off to Bowman. And that's really the only reason why I could see him not panning out would be if his confidence was just so low. But that being said, he comes off that game into a Sacred Heart game, and he looked great. He looked awesome. He had a couple open mid-ranges, stepped out beyond the three-point line, hit a couple open threes. So I think you're going to start to see him, and that's only going to go off from here.
I think it's just a matter of time, right? Just get a little confidence, start seeing some shots go down until he becomes the player that we expect him to be.
Yeah,
right?
For sure. He's just going to keep taking him, keep going at the rim, and
we see him go at the rim when the spin move he does. But I think he's tried it a couple of times now. Just ridiculous.
Yeah, he has gotten blocked off the spins, but he'll still start to finish. Yeah, looks incredible.
It's just the athleticism, right? We know it's there. It's just a matter of time. We know he's a great player. Once he sees a couple shots start going in, once he puts up, you know, double-digit points a couple of games in a row, starts building that confidence up, I think he will be the player we expected him to be, and then some. I think another thing, and you touched on it earlier, I'm just going to talk about it again. Winston Tabbs is just
he's filling it up.
He was completely overlooked, right? Everyone this year was talking about Jarius Hamilton, and you wonder if that even played to his advantage that he didn't have that much attention. You know, maybe all the hype about Jarius Hamilton, you know, negatively affected him. Winston Tabbs is an incredible basketball player. He put up 28 last night. He's just filling the stat sheet. He's athletic. He can run the floor quickly. He can control the pace of the game. You know, he can hit the threes. He can go underneath the hoop and, you know, reverse layup. He's got everything working for him if he wants it. And he really is going to be, you know, we see that we have a good core in place for the next couple of years. You know, Jarius Hamilton and Winston Tabbs, and you build around them, that's going to be a very good team even once Kai's gone, once Pop's gone.
You have a core now.
Exactly. You have two guys who look like they can become stars. You know, Winston Tabbs is already showing signs of it. And, you know, we're seeing flashes out of Jarius Hamilton. So that's great to see. Because that was definitely something I was worried about. I was like, what happens once Jerome and Kai leave? What's going to be left behind? And Chapman, this has to be Chapman's last
year.
He's like 27 or something.
Yeah, he went to BYU, so he did the whole mission trip thing.
Yeah. Once you lose, you know, losing Kai, I think we can agree that he's going to go to the draft this year. And Chapman, just due to eligibility, you know, we thought, what are we going to have next year? But we clearly see we have two players who can become the future of this program to help keep this team competitive and keep it at the level it's at and hopefully elevate it to new levels over the next couple of years.
Yeah. No, absolutely, I agree. I think you have a core now. You're not just a guard-heavy team. You have talented big men. And, you know, we were talking about the core. We're not even talking about Steph. Steph's only going to get better. Steph can do no wrong in my eyes. So, you know, you're looking forward to these three guys kind of growing up together on this team. And
yeah.
Potentially, you know, if they stick around long enough, potentially, you know, getting this team into a tournament their junior and senior year.
I agree. I think now, let's talk about where you think this team's going to go. You talked about it earlier. You thought they would be, what was it, 16 and
14.
14.
I'm going to stick with it.
You're sticking with it?
Sticking with it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to... I think I was 19 and 11.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to say I predicted. I'm going to stick with it.
Good.
I think this team's...
I was going to make fun of you if you didn't.
Yeah. I think they've shown some signs. Again, they were slow early on, but they've shown some signs that they're growing. They're turning the corner, and they're, you know, becoming a more confident bunch. They're playing better together. I think it should be another exciting year from this Boston College basketball team. I think we'll see some postseason basketball again. Most likely NIT. NIT.
Most likely NIT. Anybody who listens to the radio show knows why I'm mad about him saying that. Yeah, I don't see postseason play this year. Look, I think the ACC is just too good. I think BC's worth. We'll steal a game against somebody that we shouldn't. You know, we're not going to beat Duke again this year. I hate to say it, but we'll, you know,
we're not.
We'll steal a game somewhere against a couple top 25 teams, whether it's a Syracuse or, you know, a Miami or a Florida State if they break into the top 25 and come up here. That's all well and good. Look, I just think it's too deep. It's tough to justify putting in a team that's around 500, and I think that that's what this team is going to be. I don't think we're going to have a winning record in conference play. So I think it's going to be tough to get into postseason play. Maybe next year, maybe 2 years down the road. We'll see. But look, this is definitely a rebuilding year kind of. You know, the core, three of your five best players are all underclassmen in Steph, Winston, and Hamilton.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll see going forward. But yeah, there's definitely some excitement now having one. Three in a row with a couple big tests coming up. We'll see what happens.
Absolutely. You know, I think with that pretty much wraps up this.
Yeah.
What do we call it? Most wonderful time
of
the year.
It is the most wonderful
podcast.
Time of the year pod.
Yeah. You know, touched on all three major sports here. It's great to have them all going on. You know, make sure to, you know, check out WCBC Sports on Twitter, as we will be tweeting out where the football team ends up going, and, you know, we'll be tweeting out when new podcasts are coming out and anything else, that any other information that we put out. Yeah, make sure to keep tabs on this basketball team. See where
good
they
one.
End up going. You like that?
That's great. Snuck that one in.
Snuck it a little. Yeah, beautiful. And, yeah, you know, stay in touch with this hockey team, because I still think this team has
they'll
the potential
figure
to figure
they'll
it
figure
out.
Out.
You have a great coach. I would expect them to make a run towards the end of the season. With that, signing out. Thanks for listening, guys, and we'll catch you on another podcast.
Santini, make a nice little pass over to Sanford. Sanford gives it to Tuck. Tuck with a shot. Oh! Tuck scores! Eagles win! The Eagles have won the 2016 Bean Pot Championship!
Catch all the excitement of Boston College athletics right here on WZBC Newton 90.3 FM. As BC's only student radio broadcasting organization, WZBC Sports brings a different viewpoint of college athletics to the table. Our student commentators know the campus, student-athlete culture, and latest beat on the teams like no other media outlet, thanks to our dedicated coverage of Boston College sports. Check out our broadcast or weekly talk show schedules at www.wzbcsports.com and get a refreshing take on sporting events at the Heights and beyond.